conversation with Sean and Alexis Phillips. Hi, Alexis. Hi, Sean.
Hello.
Hello.
So what draws you to this way of working?
Oh, well, we've been doing this work a long time. I started doing my work with trauma, I would say, long before I was born. And I have a deep connection to the knowing of the trauma in my body, but also, and I think for me, at this point in my healing and in this point in my life, more importantly, the awareness of this relationship that I have with the trauma and mm-hmm. the relationship that I have with the connection and with the ability to heal and to move through that and to find the end, I guess, of all of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So the sense of really that deep immersion in it, that even before you were born.
That this work that we do, you know, whether we work a lot with trauma, Alexis mm-hmm. and I, as you probably know, and just this, that it's not just trauma, but there's this connection, this knowing, this connection that we all have, this connection to the land, mm-hmm. this connection to nature, this connection to the elements, mm-hmm. and this connection to our ancestors. So in a way, and we really thank our teacher, our elder, Shirley Turcotte, for this information. You know, that it's forward and backward in time. It's across the generations.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this knowing about that connection, and that, you know, I feel that this work and you know, I don't know, Alexis probably agrees with me that this work is sacred work, it's ceremonial work.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as we're talking, you brought in before the beginning of, you know, recording this conversation, smudge, mm-hmm. and there is that smell pervading as we're talking. Yeah. So we're right in that spirit.
I have been so fortunate. I did a lot of my healing work in Manitoba and with Ojibwe Cree First Nations people. Mm-hmm. And although that's not part of my blood heritage, it's certainly a deep part of my experience and my healing and the teachings that come with that. And so I feel really honored that that's been a part of my healing and a part of now what I can share with people when I'm teaching my clients, is that awareness of that connectedness
mm-hmm.
to tradition, to land, to my own traditions.
Mm-hmm.
I come from Irish-Scottish heritage. And so that deep connection to my own ancestors and the drums that we use there, and the drum of Mother Earth and the songs and the circles and the ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all have this connection to ceremony and connection to nature and connection to plants and animals and transformation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
when I think about my own experience, and for me, what resonates when I hear you talking, Sean, about the importance of connection, I think about my own journey when I was in my 20s. There was such a deep sense of disconnect between me and my relationship to myself, but also my relationship to my family and to the larger community. And there was a lot of fragmentation, and trauma often does this, that there is a lot of disconnect and there is a lot of fragmentation and loss of identity. And I think in the field of psychotherapy, often we tend to emphasize some of the ways in which survivors heal from trauma or cope with the trauma, and we look at those symptoms and kind of emphasize those symptoms. And when we look at it through connection, it helps for me to kind of widen that lens and look at the ways in which we get through trauma as beautiful adaptations, and that we kind of honor and cherish the ways that we get through and the ways we live through that experience, and look at it through that wider lens of post-traumatic growth to see where the resilience was. Because, I mean, Sean and I grew up with a lot of abuse in our childhood home, and we made it through. So in working in this way, with this kind of focusing-oriented and complex trauma lens, we're looking at the places where we were connected and what we did to kind of get through that experience and to you know, be where we are now.
Right, right. So in a way, when you see a trauma victim, you actually see a trauma survivor, and then what you see is all the resilience that has enabled this person to be here. And so that you're connecting to the resilience and simply honoring it and seeing it and starting from there.
Yeah, and I would take it even further and say that we see a thriver. We see the potential for thriving,
mm-hmm.
and we see the potential for growth and beyond survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're holding that. And although, you know, I'm not going to sit with a client and let them know that, yeah, that was really horrible, and, you know, think of the positives. or let's look for the growth potential here. You know, that's not going to happen. But, you know, I'm quietly holding that. I mean, I guess the things that I'm holding, the ground beneath me is yes, what Alexis was talking about there, is that possibility for growth.
Mm-hmm.
And that those incredible adaptations, whether it's dissociation or addiction,
mm-hmm.
or cutting or whatever, all these amazing things that we do and all these amazing ways our bodies kind of knock on that door,
mm-hmm.
asking for that attending to, right? And sometimes those knocks on the door are very quiet, and sometimes they're just banging down those doors wanting that attention from us. And we do all these amazing things sometimes to not listen.
Yeah.
And that's adaptive and amazing too.
Yeah.
It's again,
it's kind of turning the story, the traditional way of looking at it, on its head. Instead of the symptom being a sign of badness, it's a symptom being a sign of adaptation and of strength.
That's right. And when we look at it that way, I mean, we're not telling that to the clients that we're working with, but we're holding that as a possibility, and we're looking for those spots where we can kind of widen that a little bit and kind of open up the lens, because that can help so much with shame and some of the feelings, like what you were saying, of kind of feeling like, you know, you're a bad person or it's your fault, and looking at the ways that you were able to get through as kind of ways of coping and creative adaptations can really help shift that identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes time. And
mm-hmm.
that takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like Jean says, you know, you are more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would agree that at this point in my life, I wouldn't change a thing. I would not change a thing. And what we went through as kids was really difficult and very challenging, and I would not change a thing.
That's a very big thing to say, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, for me, I have this knowing that I can use that I can use what happened there to nourish me and to kind of feed my bones and make them strong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a long journey, and it's an ongoing kind of process. But for me, as a therapist, that's what I hold. I hold that knowing of that possibility for growth and healing, that connection.
Mm-hmm.
A deep kind of living connection to the land that we are, and in a First Nations ceremonial way, we say all my relations, and this knowing of this interconnectedness
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
plants and animals and to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were showing a video today in our workshop about water and how water holds memory. And these experiments that they've been doing with water and how how water holds memory of a particular plant or a word or a person. And when you think of how much we are made up of water, mm-hmm. and that our waters connect and interconnect, and our waters speak to one another mm-hmm. without words. And so these are some of the things that we're aware of when we're working in the work that we're doing with trauma.
So it's a sense of maybe that flow, the water, the flow, the generations, the connection, as opposed to, say, the stuckness of trauma.
And I would say I have like a huge depth of gratitude for, you know, for the whole of my experience, you know, that I can now look back and say that the abuse is kind of a piece of me and a part of me and a part of my experience, but it's not the whole of me. It doesn't define me like it did at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, it's the best of me that I am able to do this work, that I'm able to be in connection and relationship in a way that I never was before. And for Sean and I, you know, teaching together after, you know, living what through what we lived through is, you know, it's a way, in a way it continues the healing process, and that mm-hmm. kind of using that experience to teach and kind of offering it up in that way is also kind of a sacred spiritual offering mm-hmm. up. You know, it mm-hmm. it kind of continues the healing.
So maybe from there, maybe we can transition a little bit to what the healing, how the healing occurs. Because obviously, as you pointed out, you know, the person you see, the client you see for the first time is not necessarily going to be receptive to the idea, wow, this is so wonderful and this is a treasure and, you know, that kind of stuff. So.
Yes, that would be way ahead of some of the people that walk in the door, for sure.
Yes. So how does it take place? What happens?
Well, slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's those, you know, as a therapist, you're always sort of clocking those wins and losses in a way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those shifts that happen. You know, this happens over time, but, you know, developing that relationship with the client, developing, helping the client to develop those own skills of being able to have that observer self. So mm-hmm. being able to really help the client to learn how to see themselves having that experience. And clearing space is such a beautiful, beautiful way of facilitating that. And so a lot of the work that I do in the early stages of the work is helping the client to clear space and to notice themselves in that experience, noticing themselves noticing.
Mm-hmm.
So that... Mm-hmm. You know, so that they're able to, if I'm working with a, let's say I'm working with a 35-year-old male, so that the 35-year-old male self is there and present as they're doing this other work on these other pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So that, because really for me, you know, I don't want my client, I'm wanting my client to not lose more time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a lot of the people we work with, there's been so much loss and so much lost years and lost time. So, you know, I really want the client to be noticing, right? There's a knock on the door, you mm-hmm. know, let's listen and see what the body has to offer. And in a way, it's encouraging the client in those early stages to really embrace mystery almost, you know, mm-hmm. and to be able to sit with the unknown or the known a little bit more comfortably. So resourcing and working on self-regulation and mindfulness. And there are people in our community, in the focusing community, who have all kinds of amazing knowledge in all kinds of areas. So, I mean, really what we're doing is nothing new. So that's part of it.
So that part is essentially you describe as people noticing, you know, themselves noticing things, you know, for instance, in the clearing space exercise. Mm-hmm. So that sense of here I am clearing a space, here's what's happening, and I'm observing. And so that kind of getting into a sense of self, mm-hmm. which is the opposite of dissociation.
That's right. And that's also what helps the client to be, you know, in two places at once. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing this kind of work, you know, before you would go into the focusing work with the client, you're kind of building the ground to make that possible. And you're wanting the client to be able to attend to two places at once. So when, you know, Sean talked about an example of, say, working with a 35-year-old male, I think you said, mm-hmm. and you're wanting that client to be able to see themselves in the present as that 35-year-old man that's there in the office with you, and also to be able to attend to that internal experience, whether that's taking them to a spot in the in time where maybe something happened to them when they was younger that's needing some healing there. You're wanting them to be able to attend to both at the same time.
Right. So there is a hijacked part, but there's also the ability to notice what is hijacked and what is present.
That's right. And that's what keeps the process, you know, one of revisiting mm-hmm. as opposed to re-experiencing.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how does focusing help you in that area of, you know, revisiting, experiencing, making the difference between being back into the, you know, trauma versus being in the present moment?
Well, I mean, I just look to my own experience. You know, for years, as a youth, I felt so stuck. And I felt possessed, really. I mean, I felt bad and dirty and possessed and worthless and all of those familiar things that come with child sexual abuse. And, you know, I searched out all kinds of ways of working with it. And it really wasn't until I met Shirley Turcotte. And we were able to sit together in a focusing oriented way. And she was able to sit beside me and listen to my body and to see me, to really see me and what my body was telling. My body needed to tell the story of what happened to it. And it was in that focusing way, with that focusing attitude, with an Aboriginal focusing oriented therapy lens, because as we know, Shirley is coming from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And somehow I felt that my body could finally start to share the story of what happened to it. And as we know a lot with trauma, it's in that limbic system. It's in that limbic mm-hmm. brain. It's more so in the body, than it is in that kind of talking cerebral kind of linear declarative memory place. So, focusing is such an amazing tool to be able to check in and to attend to the body in the felt sense.
Yeah. So that sense of, you know, the body that stores the trauma and, you know, then, the encounter with the therapist who can actually listen to the body, and allow, you know, it to be heard. Is that step.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it really opens that process up. And I would say when I think about my own experience too and experiences of connecting with, of working with other clients, is that often it can be so confusing at first because there isn't a lot of explicit memory mm-hmm. to work with. And so many of us, you know, start the journey with, am I crazy? You know, maybe it happened, maybe it didn't. You know, there's a lot that we can, you know, kind of do with our kind of brains. and for me, that there wasn't a way in which I could access the trauma in kind of a talk therapy way.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you remember, you know, in your personal experience or in moments of witnessing clients mm-hmm. of these moments of actually starting to connect with, wow, this happened to me, as opposed to maybe I'm just dreaming, maybe, you know, what's it like?
I mean, I would say for me, having a therapist who could, you know, reflect the body.
Mm-hmm.
was what allowed me to then connect with my own body. That I was so disconnected from my own implicit experiences,
mm-hmm.
That I really didn't have a way or an understanding of how to listen to that and make sense of that.
Mm-hmm.
And working with a focusing-oriented therapist, she was able to reflect me, and in her reflection of me, I was able to see myself for the first time.
Right, right. So until you were reflected, it was hard. You didn't have that sense, that ability to see yourself.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And you know, in connecting to the felt sense, right,
mm-hmm.
and that implicit knowing that we have, you know, in those spaces where I was able to, for the first time, kind of drop into those places, there was just a deep sense of knowing, oh,
mm-hmm.
right? That the body doesn't lie,
mm-hmm.
and the felt sense doesn't lie. And when I was able to be with that,
so I knew that
I was finding my way home.
Right, right. So that's a sense of, in a way, you know that you exist. You have the experience of being real.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for some of the clients that I work with, there's a lot of speechlessness. And a lot of that quiet kind of disappearing
mm-hmm.
that comes with trauma, which is so adaptive
mm-hmm.
again. And so there are times where, you know, we, in the work that we do, have to really look to the body and look around the body and to see what's happening there with the regression and how old is the person there where it was like that. Or this spot that the person is revisiting, and what are some of the things around that to help put that, because the body might show that there's a feeling in the room of a someone over the right shoulder, for
mm-hmm.
example, or there's other people in the room, or there's something happening to or on the body that you're seeing, but the client's not actually able to say that out loud because they're in that place where they're revisiting.
Right, so they're in the middle of the experience as opposed to being able to observe it.
Well, they're observing it too. It's
yeah.
and. They're observing it, hopefully they're observing it, and I'm going to check to make sure, like, okay, so can you see this? Are you seeing this with me?
Mm-hmm.
And they might just nod their head because, and the beautiful thing about focusing too is that, you know, we can work with the body, we can work with the person's experience, we can attend to the felt sense and the implicit movement forward that comes from that without knowing or without having to know all of the content of the story,
mm-hmm.
right? And so to stay with the person and to sort of describe what it is that you're seeing, it looks like, you know, I get a sense that, you know, there's a something kind of over the shoulder, or you're looking down, or I see in your eyes there that you're looking way off in the distance. Can you see that with me? And just sense in what's happening there,
mm-hmm.
or what was happening there.
So in something like this, in a way, you help the client see that they may not be noticing, say, their eye, where their eyes are, but you're pointing them out, so it's a little bit of that sense of helping them see
mm-hmm.
and guiding them. And then, as they are, they can connect with what it is that they're seeing,
mm-hmm.
or the experience of seeing.
Yeah, so this is really where we're moving into a different phase,
mm-hmm.
in a way, that we have a kind of, we've done some work around making sure that the client is able to self-regulate, making sure that the client has some awareness of that observer self,
mm-hmm.
that they're able to contain and distance. So we've done all of that work, and then we're really moving into more of the deeper focusing work,
mm-hmm.
where the person is dipping into their experience and that remembering, that revisiting and reviewing of what has happened back then, to find out, you know, what's needing to be attended to, because there may be something from the past that's wanting to, you know, just be noticed
mm-hmm.
and be heard and seen, but there also may be something from the past that's wanting the person from the now to know. And also, conversely, there may be something that the 35-year-old man, if we go back to that, I don't have any 35-year-old men in my practice right now, so it's so funny that I would say that. I don't know where that's coming from.
Right.
But you know, the 35-year-old man may have something that he, in his wisdom, might need to say to that other part, right? So that conversation can happen in both directions.
Yeah. But so that's part of the work of connection, and you mentioned how important connection is. So maybe can we talk a little bit more about connection and not just, you know, connection to the various parts, but, you know, the all that sense of connection to the land, connection to ancestors, and how, you know, this helps in your work.
Yeah. You know, when we're looking at the work through the Aboriginal focusing oriented therapy lens, what I've found so helpful in working with clients is that, you know, we're looking for those spots where there was connection. And, you know, often for clients when they are, you know, visiting some of those really difficult places to go back and visit to, some resources mm-hmm. are needed there.
Mm-hmm.
And so in working in this way, we're always looking for those places of connection, whether that's to a tree, whether that's to the animals, whether that's to the elements. Where are those places that client has found a deep sense of connection within themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the places that exists for them? And we're looking at kind of helping them to use those tools and those resources to help them gather strength,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they can then keep nice and close them as they're visiting some of these, you know, difficult places to be with.
Yeah. So in other words, instead of just noticing, oh, you know, these people are disconnected, you notice where the connections are, and that's where you can build from there.
Yeah.
I was working with a young woman who was working through some of her trauma,
mm-hmm.
And there was a moment where she noticed the intergenerational connection to what mm-hmm. was happening there, where she noticed that it wasn't just her experience of working through that, but it was her mother's, her grandmother's, mm-hmm. her great-grandmother's. Mm-hmm. And there was something for her that was... there was something for her that was deeply kind of powerful there for her. There was grief, mm-hmm. and there was some sense of loss, but also this sense of connection.
Right,
and this sort of, you know, wow, like I come from a long line of very strong, resilient women who know a lot about trauma. And they're all standing behind me and they're cheering me on. You know, this is what sort of came for her.
Right.
I mean, that's not a direct quote. She said it much better than that, but just that awareness that came for her, and just bringing those ancestors in and calling them in and having those helpers there.
Yeah. But so, as you described this example, what's beautiful about it is that sense of, you know, that describing the connection is not something about, say, a belief system of, say, belief in ancestors in general, or saying this is, part of an Aboriginal belief system. But it's about, you know, that anybody can connect to their ancestors and to how they provide strength and...
Yes, I mean, I'm so glad you said that, because, I mean, this is, you know, when we look at some of these things in science, or, you know, this connection to each other, you know, this is something that Indigenous people have known from the beginning of time,
mm-hmm.
this connection to the land, and that we're all connected, and we're living connection. And we all have that. We all have that connection. We all have... that awareness of, you know, if I would just encourage the people that are listening to this interview to kind of, you know, think about a time in their life where they were using a connection to a tree or a flower or a plant or an animal or, you know, something from the land, something from nature that came as a helper,
right,
or an ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or a story of an ancestor, right? We all have that. This is something in First Nations communities, where I've spent time and where I've learned a lot, in Manitoba, and my elder Lina Hart that I work with and Dave Kershane have taught me a lot about, we all have a piece of this very complex puzzle and this very complex journey toward healing
mm-hmm.
and to helping Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And we need all of us to connect from all generations, from all parts of the medicine wheel, from all directions all over to be starting to connect more to each other, to the land. And that's so important. And I can see that with clients and people that I work with and the students here that we're teaching at the FOT World Conference where we are right now. just how hungry we are to know and to remember, because I think we've always known,
mm-hmm.
to remember and to bring that awareness that we are connected,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know? And I think for me, had I had a therapist that really focused on how alone I, because I felt pretty alone a lot, and if I'd had a therapist that had really colluded with that and, oh, that's so terrible, you're so alone, you know, that would have not been helpful for me at all. Okay, I hear all of that. I hear all of the alone.
Yeah, but it's old news. Yeah, but it's not.
Yeah, it's old news. Let's give that some space. And how are you not alone?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, I mean, here's my sister, right? And I know that I knew that she was there. And I knew that we're connected. And there were days where it's like, I got myself up and got myself to live because of that connection,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's an amazing thing to mm-hmm. be able to connect to. Wow, I did that. Good job, you know? and again, for those that are listening, to really, if you want to know more about Aboriginal psychotherapy and to sort of understand that a little bit more, please go to Aboriginal Psychotherapy on YouTube. Shirley Turcotte has a beautiful, very powerful video about that. There's nothing I could say, you know, any better than that. so that might help some of the people that are listening. But
good.
It's that deep knowing
mm-hmm.
And owning of that connection that I think
yeah.
can be so helpful in this work where we feel at such a loss and so hopeless
mm-hmm.
at times,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes.
And mm-hmm. often, you know, when I think about what Sean's saying, you know, there's a way in which as people in relationship, you know, everything is relational, and there's a way that, you know, sometimes we find ways to hold each other up that, you know, when I think about Sean and I and how we got through as children, you know, there's probably lots we did wrong there, you know, but we did it and we got through it. And, you know, it was very, very hard. And yet, there's also a real, a beauty in that.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. That's something that we can, you know, honor. And, you know, I'm always, humbled by the enormous potential of the human spirit.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, what we can get through.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that sense of instead of just seeing the victim, is that sense of honoring the thriver.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And helping, you know, helping our clients to see that
mm-hmm.
in a way that's gentle, in a way that, you know, we're helping to kind of shine the light in that direction.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the beauty. There's yeah. so much beauty. And how much that can help us too.
Yeah, and as you pointed out at the beginning, from personal experience, that at those moments, the personal experience is more of the ugliness and the shame, and you know, and seeing the beauty is a way to show the light out of the tunnel, to show the direction for growth, to show, you know, to guide people there.
Yeah, and for many people, that can be, you know, a real paradigm shift.
Yeah.
In the way that we look at this work.
Yeah.
Because we're looking at it from that perspective and not you are broken.
Mm-hmm.
You are, you know, you're bad and broken. And this is a forever kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't get to erase the trauma that happened to me. So that will always be a part of my experience. But I dip in and out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's an ongoing kind of journey that we're
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get to erase those things.
Right.
And I would say, fortunately, we don't, for me, you know,
mm-hmm.
Because I get to use that.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to deepen my understanding of what it is to be human and what it is to be in relation and what it is to be connected.
Mm-hmm.
And what beauty can sometimes come from that suffering and that pain, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
When I hear you say that, I'm reminded of our colleague, Robin Kaplan, and she was saying when she was speaking about how pain is beauty is the antidote to pain and suffering.
Beauty is the antidote to suffering and trauma,
and
is what she said.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's so beautiful, and it mm-hmm. really captures what we're saying here. You know, that for me, when I think about the connection that I have to trees,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, in many ways, trees helped me through. And those places where I was in a sense of wonder or awe and deep connection to something much larger than myself,
yeah.
Helped me to get through some pretty difficult moments.
Beautiful. So that feels like a very beautiful. Just want to check if that feels like a good place to end for you, or if you...
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
want to add something?
And just for me to say what an honor it is to be able to have this conversation
mm-hmm.
and to acknowledge that we're here and that we made it through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always easy, and we have our rough days, but it really is such a joy and an honor to sit here with my sister.
Yeah.
And what we did together and apart to make it to this point where we can teach together and share what we know. And we know a lot about trauma and how to get through that, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
to also honor the elders and the teachers that we've had that have gotten us to this point, and our parents,
mm-hmm.
all of them, you know. And
we've had some tremendous helpers along the way.
Yes, we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't
yeah.
do this work without our helpers, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.